Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So we'll read from the fourth chapter, Transcendental Knowledge, text number 34. Tadvidi pranipatena pari prashnena sevaya upadeksyanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvidarshanaha. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire from him submissively, and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Purport, the path of spiritual realization is undoubtedly difficult. The Lord therefore advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the line of disciplic succession from the Lord himself. No one can be a bona fide spiritual master without following the principle of disciplic succession. The Lord is the original spiritual master, and a person in the disciplic succession can convey the message of the Lord as it is to his disciple. No one can be spiritually realized by manufacturing his own process, as is the fashion of the foolish pretenders. The Bhagavatam 6.3.19 says, Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. The path of religion is directly enunciated by the Lord. Therefore, mental speculation and dry arguments can help lead one to the right path. Nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender, and one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant without false prestige. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is a secret of advancement in spiritual life. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master. And when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses his disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. In this verse, both blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. Not only one should hear submissively from the spiritual master, but one must also get a clear understanding from him in submission and service and inquiries. A bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind toward the disciple. Therefore, when the student is submissive and is always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries become perfect. Tadvidi pranipatena pari prashnena sevaya upadeksyanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvidarshanaha. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire from him submissively, and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Namo Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Pristai Bhute Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Taramane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatya Deva Siddharane. In the beginning of this chapter, Krishna has stated, Imam Vishvate Yogam Praktavan Aham Avyayam Vivishvan Manave Praha Manor Ishvakave Bravi. That 120 years ago approximately, Krishna, he spoke the knowledge of the science of God consciousness and self-realization to the sun god. The sun god repeated the same knowledge to his son, and then whose name is Manu, and then Imam Vyushvate Yogam Proktavanaham Avyam Vyushvan Manave Praha Manor Ikshvakave Pravit. And then Manu instructed the same knowledge to his son, to his disciple, whose name was Ikshvaku. Evam Parampara Praptam Emam Rajarshi Yovidu Sakaleneha Mahata Yogo Nashta Parantapa. In this way, the knowledge is received in what's called parampara, or disciplic succession. So this is an essential element of disciplic succession, is to repeat what Lord Krishna has said. And here it says, no one can be a bona fide spiritual master without following this principle of disciplic succession. So bona fide spiritual master, one of his qualifications is he simply repeats what he's heard from his spiritual master who is in disciplic succession. We can get this from this verse, that this is an essential qualification. And from the other side, he doesn't manufacture his own process. There is persons who manufacture their own process. Now, the question may be that sometimes people manufacture their own process and quote scripture in order to justify their manufacturing of their own process. So who's actually to say which process is manufactured and which process is actually bona fide? That's the question. Therefore, there may be different ways of understanding, but ultimately, one will judge whether a process is manufactured or is bona fide by different ways. One of them is by trying to understand the scripture, and the other is by practical experience. In other words, scripture is not supposed to be, as Prabhupada writes here, blindly followed, but once you get a clear understanding by service, submission, and inquiry. One time, one devotee asked Prabhupada, "Can you tell us about Buddhism?" Not a devotee, actually. It was just someone in the class. It was at 26 Second Avenue. And Prabhupada said, "Do you follow Buddhism?" And then the person says, "No, I just want you to tell us something about Buddhism." Prabhupada said, "Follow something. Just don't talk. If you want to, not that we just idly talk about some philosophy, but we don't apply it within our lives." Sometimes the devotees may, even the devotees, or anyone may speculate on a certain philosophy, but they're not really even prepared to follow it. Therefore, this is called absurd inquiries or idle speculation. And sometimes one may even come up with a philosophy which is contradictory. In other words, in itself, it defeats itself. Therefore, it's not even possible to follow it. But one wants to talk about it anyhow. And sometimes people go to the extent of creating movements on philosophies which are contradictory. They can't even be applied. One example is, for instance, the Ridvik philosophy, which there are many varieties of the Ridvik philosophy. But the Ridvik philosophy says that you can have a direct relationship with Prabhupada without having to go through anyone else. The only problem with the philosophy is that in order to understand how to have a direct relation with Prabhupada, you have to go through them. Just like I read the other day, one person was speaking, Sandy Nixon, was asking Prabhupada that some spiritual masters, they talk about the guide within the heart, finding the guide within the heart, that's the essential thing. So Prabhupada said, "This is nonsense." He said, "Because if the whole process is just to find the guide within the heart, then what do you need him for? The person who's telling you to do it." And the same, then the devotees were pointing out some people who had that philosophy, and they also said, Prabhupada, that you don't need, they've written books on how not to read books. You don't need books. So these philosophies in themselves are contradictory. But still, people take them seriously for some reason or another, although inherently they're contradictory in themselves, and therefore they can be rejected as being unbona fide. Because Krishna, when he gives knowledge, is consistent. Prabhupada also said that this knowledge is most consistent and exacting and voluminous due to its unbreakable line of disciplic succession. So though there's many facets and aspects of the philosophy, still it's consistent. It's not contradictory within itself. Therefore, the knowledge must come from Krishna. It must be consistent. It has to be logical. And it's in line with the teachings of predecessor authorities. Prabhupada used to emphasize that he was not introducing something new, but he was simply trying to convey in a palatable, practical way what the previous acharyas had tried to explain and institute. And the ultimate result has to be something appreciable. Namely, one should become aware of Krishna and one should positively become in love with Krishna. Prema Pamartha Mahat. That is the goal of the Krishna consciousness philosophy. One should know what the goal is, and therefore one will be able to understand whether or not he's actually following either the correct process or the process correctly. Because there's always a possibility we may follow the correct process, but we may do it incorrectly, or we may correctly follow the incorrect process. Therefore, one should know what the results of following the process should be. For instance, bhakti pareshanu vyaktir anyatra trika eka kala prapadamanasya yatashnatasus tushti pushti shudapai nugasam. That just like when one eats a meal, Prabhupada used to point out that no one has to come up with a certificate demonstrating or acknowledging the fact that one has eaten a meal. Like, so-and-so has eaten a meal, now he has three attributes. He feels satisfied, his hunger has been alleviated, and he feels some strength. And here is his certificate to prove it. No, if one eats a meal, then actually one should feel satisfaction from eating the meal. One should feel some strength, and one should feel the alleviation of his hunger. Even if one gets the certificate and he doesn't feel these things, then his meal was either eaten improperly or was the wrong meal to eat. Similarly, by the proper execution of bhakti, the process of bhakti yoga, one should feel or experience three things. Viraktir, which means detachment from those things which draw the mind away from Krishna. And pareshanubhava means to be able to see how things are related to Krishna. And bhakti means growing feelings of affection and love towards Krishna and things in relationship to Krishna. This should be the result of practically applying the process of bhakti yoga. So, one should try to understand with his reason and intelligence what is the proper process and how to properly apply it, and it should be judged, it will be judged by oneself, whether one is actually experiencing those three things. Then it says here that one should be aware that mental speculation or dry arguments cannot help one on the right path. Nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender. One should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant without false prestige. So this is the process that's recommended. Now this is not, as we notice here, a process of simply taking initiation. Krishna doesn't say, just approach someone with a beard, bow down before him, get the mantra in your new name, and you'll become self-realized. That's the process. And if he asks you to do something, smile and and make like you understand and just go away. Now here Krishna explains in more detail what the process is, and the process is submission, service, and inquiry. So this idea of submission, of course, for that, this is the reason why there's a process of initiation. Because in the material world, generally speaking, as conditioned souls, our first business is to be rebellious. People feel good about being unsubmissive. Although, by nature, we're always submissive, but we feel good about being submissive to our imaginations, or our perverted intelligence, our unbridled senses. These are the things that have inspired us since time immemorial. Therefore, to give up our loyalty, our submission, our surrender to our mind and senses specifically, it's very difficult for the conditioned soul, who's in love with himself. Ultimately, he thinks that there's no one that's more wonderful than myself, nor can anyone ever be more wonderful, and even if there was someone more wonderful, so what? The only person I'm really concerned about who's wonderful is my wonderful self. Therefore, the idea of actually becoming surrendered or submissive to anyone else is pretty much why we're here in the first place, because we don't want to become surrendered or submissive to anyone except for ourselves. Therefore, the first duty is to become submissive, and generally we're willing to become submissive to anyone that we think will help us become more surrendered and develop more love for ourselves. Person who seems to be completely surrendered to himself and is completely enamored with himself, he becomes our authority. Because under his authority and by becoming submissive to him, we can learn how to love ourselves more and become more submissive to our every demand and desire to satisfy ourselves. But here it says that one should try to learn submission from a representative of Krishna, and the most important aspect of the representative of Krishna is that he says that there's another purpose in life other than satisfying oneself, is to satisfy Krishna. So trying to satisfy someone who's trying to satisfy Krishna, then this is the secret advancement in spiritual life. So this satisfaction, of course, means that such a person should be satisfied in the activities that satisfy Krishna. Not that my spiritual guide, he takes great satisfaction in so many different things because he has the title, it doesn't matter what he takes satisfaction in. If I just satisfy him, then automatically I'll get all the results. No. The spiritual master should be satisfied in things that satisfy Krishna. And if we want to find out what satisfies Krishna, that's why we have all these different books, to find out what's satisfying to Krishna. So the spiritual master is one who takes satisfaction in satisfying Krishna and his spiritual master. Therefore, that's called disciple succession. And one who tries to satisfy the spiritual master, then this is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. But that satisfaction of the spiritual master means that one has to try to satisfy him in the same way that he's trying to satisfy his spiritual master in Krishna, by following the actual disciple succession. That no one can actually manufacture his own process of self-realization. So submission to the right thing, and then here it says inquiry, jignasu. Jignasu shreya uttama. Tasmat guru, gurum prapadyate, jignasu shreya uttama. That one should be inquisitive about the ultimate good. Ultimate good means that not that I'm going to learn how to become happy for 15 minutes or a lifetime or 10 days or a year or whatever. that what is happiness in the material world? It means pratishta, all the anarthas that we talk about. How to become famous. That my guru, I'm going to follow in his footsteps, and then one day I'll be able to sit on a big seat, and everyone will come down and throw petals at my feet, and I'll become very happy. So, this, even if we project our own conception of what happiness is on the guru, or any devotee, that he's enjoying in a certain way, and this is the way I'm going to enjoy in the future too. I would like to be up there when people throw petals at my feet. Therefore, I'm going to follow in his footsteps, and one day the petals will arrive at my feet too. Or if I had many disciples, they'd all give me some money, and I wouldn't have to worry about my old age either. So let me follow in his footsteps and inquire from him submissively how one day I can get the truth, how to become materially happy and prosperous. So the inquiry should be Shrey Uttama about what is my ultimate good. Theoretically, we should understand my ultimate good is to realize that I'm not this body and that I'm Krishna's servant. So we have to be really seeing whether or not my inquiries are directed towards realizing who I am in relation to Krishna in a practical way. Tasmad Guru Prapadyate Jignasu Shrey Uttama. So one should be inquisitive about the ultimate good. And as it says here, that inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. So these two things. So unless there is submission and service, inquiries from these learned spiritual master will not be effective. So service has to be there also, as it says here later on, that one must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master. One who's actually learned in the science of self-realization, he'll be able to tell by the inquiry, by the activities of the particular person who's inquiring from him, what is his question? What is his ability to understand the answer to the question? If a 5-year-old child asks, "My dear mother, where did my 3-year-old brother come from?" So, if the mother decides to take out anatomy chart and explain physiology and anatomy to the 5-year-old child, sexology and everything else, she may start talking above the 5-year-old child's head, because nowadays you don't know, but this is just what's that?
He already knows.
What's that? No, I don't think. This is, anyhow, for the purpose of an analogy, we're using this. That, generally speaking, one has to speak relevantly, just like in the previous times, they used to talk about a stalk bringing the, Johnny. And most of the 5-year-old children were, found this understanding acceptable. Because deeper explanations would not be understood because the foundation and the experience is not there. Similarly, if one tries to explain deeper realizations about the Absolute Truth to those who aren't prepared, not only they won't be able to understand it, but their interest and taste for spiritual understanding will actually diminish. And because their taste and interest diminishes, the speaker will actually indirectly become discouraged. Therefore, one has to address the audience appropriately according to their capacity, not only to understand the subject matter, but also in such a way as to increase their enthusiasm to follow it. Because if one speaks to an audience and he tells you, just like if you tell your 5-year-old child, "Don't throw paint on the couch," And the next thing your five-year-old child does is pick up the paint and throw it on the couch. Then one's enthusiasm to deliver instructions in that particular way will probably diminish when they look for other avenues of applying instructions, or when they decide that to express things in a slightly different way. So similarly, one who's giving instructions, he has the obligation to try to understand who the audience is, what their level of submission is, what their actual inquiry is, and try to express things in such a way as to increase their submission, their understanding, their inquiry, so that they can do something in such a way as to help them acquire a clear understanding and experience in Krishna consciousness. When there's a real desire of the disciple, even a small desire or some genuine desire, then the spiritual master will deliver the message in such a way as to help the disciple advance. Or the teacher will deliver the message in such a way as to appropriately express things in such a way as that the follower will understand things clearly, clear enough to put into practice and help him advance his spiritual life. And the result of advancement should be a clear understanding and experience. But if there is blind following or absurd inquiries, that this is condemned. That one has to, if one is actually trying to help people advance in spiritual life, then one has to recognize whether the persons he's talking to are just blindly following. In other words, you say, jump, and the only thing they say is, how high? Or blind following means there's no interest in understanding exactly what it's called niyamagraha, what the result should be. One just does it mechanically because they told me to do it. That's usually the excuse. I didn't get any reason. I did it for so many years, and I did it because they told me to do it, but I never got any result from it. And therefore, there's something wrong with the process. Yes, there's something wrong with one's following the process if one does not try to understand should be the results of the activity. Or if one is simply trying to find some, or he says, absurd inquiries. If one has some other inquiry other than finding the highest goal, then naturally one won't be interested in inquiring very deeply about the actual subject matter. Sometimes we even find that the devotees, they start inquiring, trying to find some fault with the philosophy. They study the books hours at an end, trying to find a contradiction, and hoping that maybe the speaker will say, you're right, that this philosophy is wrong. You have a good right to go out there and enjoy. Don't take the chance. So how many angels fit on the head of a pin? Who cares? Or the famous one was, which we spent years or lifetimes, was, where did the jiva come from? And Prabhupada pointed out how this was an absurd inquiry, because who cares where what does it really matter where the jiva came from? Just like if you were drowning in the middle of an ocean and someone came along with microphone to interview you, asking you, how did you come about to drown in this ocean? Can you give us an in-depth report, the history of it? Generally, you know, you say, you know, help, get me out of here and I'll tell you how I got... No, we're really interested in first finding out. We have a great curiosity to find out how you got here drowning in this ocean. Grant us this interview before you sink. Similarly, presently, wherever we came from, whether it was Vaikuntha or from the Brahma Jyoti, or we've been here forever, presently we're neither in Vaikuntha nor in the Brahma Jyoti. We're drowning in the material world, suffering here. So first get out, and then this useless question, where we came from, can be answered. This is Prabhupada's reasoning. He said, presently we can't understand exactly where we came from by some just philosophical investigation. But even if one could, after searching, spending one's whole life searching, try to understand, and at the end, before leaving the body, one is enlightened where one came from, the next lifetime he becomes a pig. Because he neglected his real endeavor to make spiritual advancement. Therefore, one, this is in the levels of certain inquiry. So both blind following and certain inquiry. One should get a clear understanding, and the process is submission, service, and inquiry. Therefore, when the student is submissive, it says the bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind toward the disciple. Therefore, when the student is submissive and is always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. And the more we study this combination of submission, service, and inquiries, the more we'll become enlightened about the process of devotional service, and we'll learn how to live our lives in such a way as to make positive advancement in genuine spiritual understanding. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Are there any questions? Yes.
Your quote is in the same first chapter. It said that Raja Rishis received this message. So why did the Raja Rishis, not the Brahma Rishis?
Because the Raja Rishis, the Rajarshis, they're the saintly kings. So their job in society was how to direct the citizens in such a way as to make spiritual advancement. As it says here, protect them from the onslaught of lust, material onslaught of lust. So to do that, they had to teach them how to avoid material consciousness and take up spiritual consciousness. So that was their duty. The Brahmins, they understood these things through their study. But for the general mass of people, it was the king's responsibility to see that these things were practically applied. So they had to understand things. So the personalities such as Krishna and his representatives, they instruct these saintly kings on these matters so that they could do something practical in the society with it.
It goes on from king to king, but the kings and the students.
Yeah, but after the intelligent, saintly persons who realized it understood it, they also instructed it to the kingly class. Yes.
What is the bona fide authority after doing this? You said that there are two aspects, understanding and experience. Nowadays, people first want to prove. Try to experience it.
Yeah, when you have to understand, we have to agree what is the type of proof that constitutes proof. There, according to the Vedic literature, they outline 10 different types of proof. And of the 10, three are most important. Direct experience, called pratyaksha, reasoning anuman, and shabda praman, or hearing from the authority. So if we agree upon what constitutes proof, then we can see. Generally speaking, people's idea of proof is actually quite simple. My friend told me it worked. Most people accept that as proof. The fact that someone went to the doctor, he took the medicine and it worked. So then that's at least reason enough to go and experience it myself, to see whether it works for myself. So generally we automatically accept authority, especially the authority of people we trust. On the other hand, if we're given a book by a stranger, for instance, and we try and read it, generally people won't be able to understand, or unless they're very serious for some reason, they may not be able to understand what actually is this knowledge, or whether it actually constitutes any kind of proof or not. But since the knowledge itself is Shabda Praman, if those who are serious enough with proper investigation, seriousness, then they'll be able to understand the transparency and the proof of this knowledge itself. But that takes someone who's actually jignasu, inquisitive, to do so. So that pratyaksha means direct experience. If we have some favorable experience dealing with something about Krishna consciousness, taking some prasadam, or we like the music or something, that may constitute experience or proof to ourselves. Authority or reasoning, if someone may try to reason with us, or if we accept some authority, our friends, or we read the scriptures and it reveals something to us. So there's different levels of proof, or different types of proof. So some proof has to be there, or else we won't apply it. But the proof may also be part of the experience. After all, persons are friends because we must have some experience. We accept them as an authority because we have some experience with them. Just like it's unlikely that if we went and met, what's his name in Iraq? Yeah, Hussein? Yeah, I mean, for most of us, Hussein, Mr. Hussein, probably wouldn't be a very good authority. If he gave us a lecture on how to be happy, we may not be very inspired to follow his directions.
Yes. Connected with a different point, somebody might have a theory that the absolute truth is actually understandable through a mathematical expression.
The absolute truth is actually understandable by a mathematical expression.
And he proves it, he gives some proofs, some mathematical proofs,
So those who believe that, then his proof it's acceptable. Those who actually acknowledge that, that's an axiom. In other words, we're not talking, that's more or less what's called an a priori, that I have to accept that the absolute truth can be understood mathematically. Otherwise, you may present any kind of mathematical proof to me, but if I don't accept that as an axiom, then I'm not going to. Then whatever you present to me is just meaningless.
He presents some experience, like he explains all kinds of movements and it works, and also he shows that his bank balance is very high and that he lives a very happy life.
How is he going to show me that he lives a very happy life? Just by the mathematical formula.
What is missing there?
My faith in mathematics. I have no experience of my hair standing, and after realizing that 1 + 1 = 2, although I learned that in school, you know, and I also learned that 3 + 2 = 5, and there may even be more complicated dealings. But after all, you're only dealing with 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 9 different things. Or 10 different numbers. And personally, I have no experience of my hair standing on end. So you may try to convince me that you do have experience like that. But somehow or another, I can't relate to it.
Why don't we have faith in that?
Because I have no experience like that. Now, you may go around and preach to people, and you may find someone else who does have experience. That as soon as he heard that 1 + 1 = 2, he started to roll on the ground. His hair stood on end, tears came from his eyes, and he found the light. Yeah, so then you can preach to them, because they have a different level of experience than I do, dealing with mathematics.
Yeah.
Keep on preaching, maybe you'll convince them. Anyhow, for me, my hair stood on end as soon as I heard him. Keep on, it's like nectar flowing. Yes.
Yes, Maharaj. So, you learned also here that Because I was wondering what the blessings are from the spiritual master, because when I also reading the second chapter of the Gita, it says that we're not the body. And every day before I come to Mangalati, I really try hard to tell myself I'm not this body, but when I'm looking in the mirror, there's this smiling face there. Hey, there you are again, you know. And I'm thinking, no, I'm not this body, I'm not this body. But it just doesn't work, you know. So I was thinking...
Well, looking in the mirror and smiling at yourself?
So I was thinking, you know, that if the spiritual master also gives some power now, that suddenly you say, you feel like you're not the body, or how is this working? You know? What kind of blessings are these? You know? Is it,
well, first of all, we have to have faith that the sound vibration is actually the way we receive knowledge. We think that there's some other way of receiving knowledge other than hearing. Then you have to present that to me. But hearing is the way we perceive everything. As soon as we came into the world, immediately, you know, we heard the mantras chanted by our parents, you know, goo goo goo, goo goo goo. And we start to learn, you know. You are translated into English, you know, you are that body. Hey, you're that body. Yeah. So we immediately picked up on the mantra. We understood its translation. So ever since we've been here, we've been learning through the process of hearing. So the spiritual master is one who can deliver the knowledge in such a way as it becomes understandable in a practical way.
So when I stand up tomorrow, how should I look in the mirror to watch myself?
Well, first of all, I don't know if it's the process of looking in the mirror. I haven't heard that as being one of the processes to realize.
To brush my teeth, you know, not looking in the mirror, but then the shaving part came, and this was really, my Sika went away, and everything, and scratches all off, and also, I had to stop.
Just like you're saying, well, I'm not my car, so when I'm driving down the road, I'm not going to look at it. Because I might get attached to this car, you know. So, I'm driving with my eyes closed. That way I won't get attached. No, one actually realizes that not only we're not this body, but the body belongs to Krishna. Therefore, we should handle the body very carefully because it doesn't belong to us. Therefore, we'll take better care of brushing our teeth because we're doing it for Krishna. We're shaving our head for Krishna. It's because it's Krishna's body. It's a much better way of realizing it. Krishna's body in the mirror. The body that belongs to Krishna. So I'll stop there. Thank you very much. Grantaraj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Go.